7, if you're visiting with us in John 11. We're not on it. I guess we're in it, aren't we? But we're in John chapter 11, and we're dealing with, this is the chapter that deals with the final miracle of Christ and his personal ministry. And, of course, it really, in a lot of ways, is his crowning miracle. It is a powerful miracle of raising the dead. And that has happened before. In fact, this is the third time that Jesus has raised the dead during his ministry. It happened a couple of times in the Old Testament we know of, and so it's not unheard of. We'll have more to say about this particular miracle in just a little while. But this one is a little bit unique because, so far as I know, it's the only one that emphasizes that the one who has been raised has been dead already for 4 days. And so that again sets it apart from other raisings or resurrections from the dead. And so this really is the crowning of his signs here in the book of John, and it is meant to instill faith, and that's exactly what it does. And so we were talking about this last week, getting into, we haven't gotten to the point where he performs the miracle yet, but we closed off, and Martha, of course, has met with Jesus, and she indicated to Christ that if he had been there, that that her brother would not have died. And, of course, then down at about verse 25, Jesus said to her, "I'm the resurrection and the life, and whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die." Do you believe this? And we covered that a little bit. One of the things I didn't emphasize last week is how that these words really make up the foundation in many ways of our hope as Christians. This summarizes the hope that we have in Christ. It is what keeps us going no matter what. During trials and tribulations, we have this hope of a resurrection. Our hope really, if you stop and think about it, is much like, really exactly like the hope that Martha had of her brother being raised in the last day, in that resurrection on the last day. And that's what we're hoping for, isn't it? And that, again, is something that we ought to always keep before us. I remember in Hebrews chapter 6, you're familiar with this passage, I'm sure, but the wording of it is important. It tells us the significance of having this hope at verse 18, Hebrews chapter 6 at verse 18, "so that by two unchangeable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we have fled for refuge, that might have a strong encouragement to hold fast to the hope set before us," which that's not worded that way by accident. That's exactly where this hope should always be. It should always be before us. In other words, it should always be the focus of our life. The fact that that one of these days we are going to go to heaven. And so notice this, though. He says, he continues verse 19, "we have this as a sure and steadfast anchor of the soul, a hope that enters into the place behind the curtain, where Jesus has gone as a forerunner on our behalf, having become a high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek." And we understand, of course, ultimately our hope is in heaven, but all wrapped up in that is the fact that we know, and this is indicated by Jesus in this text, that we're going to die, and yet, that is, if he doesn't come back first, we're going to die. Death is something that, of course, is inevitable. Hebrews 9, verse 27. "It's appointed that a man wants to die, but after this, the judgment." So if Jesus doesn't come back first, then we're going to die. But our hope is we're going to be raised. And again, we need to keep that before us. And that hope, I remember John over in 1 John chapter 3. He again talks about the importance of this hope. 1 John, the third chapter, and at verse 2, he said, "Beloved, we are God's children now, and what we will be has not yet been appeared. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him as he is." Now watch verse 3. "And everyone who thus hopes in him purifies himself as he is pure." And there's a connection with Hebrews chapter 6, Again, that this hope is an anchor. It keeps us from drifting away no matter what happens in life. Even when tragedy enters in, we know we have this hope. One of these days we're going to be in heaven, because if we die, we're going to be raised from the dead. That is why Paul in Romans chapter 8 at verse 24, he simply says that we're saved by hope. I think some translations use the word sustain. At least that's really the force of the Greek word there, that we are sustained by hope. It keeps us in place. It keeps us from drifting. And it helps us to live a better life. We want to live for Jesus. We want to walk according to the gospel because we have this hope. But this is the hope. Jesus summarizes it in John chapter 11, that even though we die, that we will again be raised. The question is, do we believe that? He asked Martha if she believed, and of course she made that good confession that she believed that he is the Son of God. And so belief is the condition of that hope, and it's an obedient hope, of course, or belief rather. It is something that moves us to obey God and to live according to the gospel of Christ. And so there is that condition that we have to have. But if you believe in Jesus, you will never die. And that is, of course, would be literally true if Jesus comes back before we die. But really what it's getting at is he's not saying we're not going to die physically. We are. But we have that hope of being raised from the dead. And so that is really the foundation of our Christianity and keeps us going in the right direction. And so he says that to her. And then down at, we closed off, I think, verse 27, she gives the confession there. And we sort of emphasize, at least with Martha, that it seems like her faith has elevated because of some of the things that Jesus has said here. And I wouldn't be dogmatic about that, but that it appears to me that that is the case. As we go further, we see that Mary seems to me to have a higher kind of faith than even her sister, which isn't unusual in a family. Mary, and that's not a knock on Martha. Again, in the next chapter, we'll praise Martha some for her. You know, we've talked about her being a servant, and she constantly is serving. And sometimes we can get caught up in comparing that with Mary. Mary was more into the spiritual. And somehow it seems as if we're knocking Martha. And that's not the case. She did allow that service to get in her way spiritually a little bit. But raise your hand if you've never done that. Anybody here ever let something physical get in the way of your faith just a little bit? And I mean, we've all done that. The fact of the matter is, her attitude, her willingness to serve wasn't a negative, unless she, again, got things a little bit unbalanced sometimes. But overall, serving and serving others is a great thing. That's what Christianity is all about, really. And so there's a lot to be commended by Martha. But it was Mary that constantly sat at Jesus' feet. Almost every time you hear of Mary, she's at the same place. She's at the feet of Jesus, ultimately. And that says something about her. But we'll get more into that in the next chapter. But here, picking up at verse 28 then, after she makes that good confession, she now believes without question that Jesus is the Son of God. If she didn't recognize that before, she does now. And at verse 28, it says, and when she had said this, she went and she called her sister Martha, saying in private, the teacher is here and is calling you. And so again, remember, of course, I think you realize that in all of these narratives, we don't have the full conversations going on between these characters. I mean, how thick would the Bible have to be if we had that? That's not the case at all. But it appears, even though we don't have the wording here, it's clear from verse 28 that Jesus has directed Martha to call Mary. And so she leaves after she makes that good confession, and she goes to her sister Mary. Remember, she's still sitting there in the house and grieving her brother. Martha goes to her. The teacher is here and is calling for you. Watch how Mary responds. And when she heard it, she rose quickly and went to him. So she didn't hesitate, did she? a good insight into what we should do when we hear the words of Jesus. When he gives us a command, how quickly should we obey? Just right now. We shouldn't hesitate at all. We should rise quickly and do whatever it is that he commands us to do. And such was the case with Mary. She rose up quickly, not only out of obedience, but no doubt even excitement, wanting to go to Jesus. It says, and when she heard it, she rose up quickly. Verse 30, now Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who were with her in the house consoling her saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. Now, when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And it's very interesting here. You see the same words from Martha and Mary, but a little different action here. Mary, right when she comes to Jesus, what did it say she does? What did she do that Martha did? Fell right at his feet. And once again, I don't know that we can judge Martha too hardly because harshly because she didn't do that. But the fact that Mary did does say something, at least about Mary, that she had that humble spirit. She certainly recognized the authority of Jesus Christ. And so she immediately, in an act of humility, falls to his feet. But she says exactly what Martha said. Remember how we said before, many commentaries, they're real hard on Martha for saying these very words. And there are some commentaries who, even with regard to what Mary says here, that it says, say that this was a demonstration of a lack of faith and kind of a little, a mild rebuke of Jesus. And you can do what you want with that. I don't personally believe that. I don't think at all that Mary was indicating a lack of faith by what she said. They're grieving. And grieving is real, a real experience. And what they both said was right. There's no doubt that if Jesus had gotten there sooner, if he chose to, he had the ability to heal Lazarus before he died. No doubt about that. So they're just stating that truth. And obviously they had spoken about this thing. That's why their words are exact. You go back and read Martha's words, they're exact, word for word. Because they probably articulated that to themselves. When Jesus didn't show up and their brother died, they probably said that to each other. And so it's just interesting. Mary says the same thing. If you had been here, my brother would not have died. But now watch. Verse 33 is pretty interesting, because it says when Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come with her weeping, he was deeply moved and in his spirit, moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. Now you tell me, what do you think about when you read Jesus? How do you think Jesus is feeling there? Huh? Sympathy. And I wouldn't dispute that at all. Who else? Sorrow. Do you know that in some of your translations, I don't know what translation says what here, to be honest with you, but some translations indicate what I'm about to say. See that word moved there? That word moved, it says that he was deeply moved. That Greek word means to be indignant, is what it means. See the word trouble there? It means the word trouble, the Greek word, means to be agitated. So, in other words, what this passage is telling us, that Jesus was mad. He's angry. When he sees Mary weeping and these people weeping, he's angry. And I don't doubt at all the response that, yes, he had sympathy, and he shows that throughout this text, and he's a compassionate individual. We see that in this passage and in other passages. There's no doubt about that. But this verse 33, isn't giving us the message, Jesus is compassionate. It's giving us the message, Jesus is mad. He's indignant. He's agitated by the fact that these folks are crying. The question is, why? And many commentaries, before I go, I didn't mean, Matt, you had your your hand up. I think, were you going to? Okay, yeah, yes, stirred up, but it indicates a sense of anger, now it just depends. Now, of course, you know, you get to answer the question why, and that's where some believe that Mary was showing a lack of faith here, and he's mad at her. And I don't, you know, to me, do you think Jesus understood the natural grieving process that every human being experiences at the loss of a loved one? I mean, can we all conclude together that certainly Jesus, the Son of God, can understand that and relates to that? And if he's angry because Mary is upset, it would be the opposite of compassion, it seems to me. It would be a lack of compassion and a lack of understanding. And I wouldn't attribute that to Jesus at all. I think the whole circumstances. I mean, for some reason, he is indignant here. He is angry. He is agitated. He is disturbed over all of this. And my conclusion is, the only conclusion that I think, if he isn't mad at the lack of faith of Mary, it's just the overall circumstance. The sorrow that is there. Why is there sorrow on this occasion? Because of what? Right, because of death. And death comes because of sin. And that makes Jesus mad. Just seeing a good friend of his weeping and being filled with sorrow and all of that. Now, Jesus, again, he could have gone right there and put a stop to all of that before it even happened. But he has a higher agenda. He's going to glorify his Father, and he's going to build the faith of these folks when they see the resurrection. So that's his plan. He knows what he's doing from the beginning with all of this. But just to see them being filled with sorrow because of death, because of sin, that's, to me, maybe you have a different explanation of what made him mad. But to me, that's what made him mad. And it should make us mad. Just the result of sin in our society, the mess that this society is in. You know, we ought not to, we can't help sometimes to get mad at people, perhaps, but it's the sin that we really should be angry at, that causes all of the disturbances and all these false things that are happening in our society right now. Our world is changing. We've said it over and over about the homosexuality and transgender and all that kind of stuff and abortion and all of that. But the sin, we don't hate the homosexual, do we? We hate the sin. And we see our society and we see listen, it's not our society. It's the world. It seemed like I can't remember what I read. Someone else may have read it here too and can remind me. But Israel did something, had some kind of celebration or something with a transgender, something for a first time in Israel. What was it?
A beauty queen.
Okay. All right. So, and the first transgender beauty queen in Israel. And so, you know, I've said for a long time, we somehow think, oh, this country is going to fall, is going to collapse because of the immorality. This is not a United States problem. This is a problem with the world. Homosexuality is sweeping the globe, and country after country is dealing with this. And the sad thing to me is the only country seeming to take a real strong stand on this are the Muslim countries. I heard a king not too long ago say, if you come to our country, you will die. We'll put you to death if you practice homosexuality. And so that's kind of ironic, isn't it, of the people. And maybe even Russia's still taking a stronger stand on homosexuality than we do. But the point of it is, this is a moral thing. And it doesn't mean that we're just, we are angry at people all over the place. It's sin. It's sin that's causing all of this. And people are making poor choices. It doesn't mean that they're inherently evil or anything. They're just making poor choices, being influenced by sin. And that should anger us. And all the sadness and sorrow that it produces. We get to the point where we're not like Jesus, indignant about the sin around us. That's even a bigger problem. In the church particularly, let's not ever get used to the moral situation that we find ourselves in. Go ahead, Fred. I'm sorry.
We read earlier that Jesus told Mary and Martha that this sickness is coming unto death.
Yes.
He told them that.
Yes.
And I see a parallel here with Isaac and Abraham and Isaac.
Yes. 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 Yeah. Well, and Fred, and that's good that you think that. The only difference in those situations is Abraham had some real reason to believe. I mean, he kind of deduced that because there was no other way that the promise of God could be fulfilled unless Isaac was going to be raised from the dead. And so Abraham's thinking, I mean, he was really at a dilemma there. This was the first time that Abraham, what Fred is talking about, the first time that his faith was sort of in or what God commanded was in contrast to the promise that God made. Remember, Isaac, the seed, was going to come through Isaac, not any other son. And so Abraham's thinking, if that be the case and the promise of God is true and is going to stand, then I believe that God is going to raise my son from the dead. And so against hope, he hoped. And so that's a good parallel. It falls a little short simply because there is no promise with regard to that. And even if, and I don't doubt at all what you quoted there, that when Jesus talked about that, that he meant he was going to raise Lazarus. But that's not what came to Martha's mind. She was thinking resurrection. She believed Jesus, yes. But she was thinking he's going to be raised in the resurrection at the last day, not right now. See, and that's, I think, that wasn't a terrible lack of faith there. I think every one of us, there's no doubt in mind that every one of us tonight would have thought the same thing. My brother's sick. If Jesus would have come, he would have lived, but he didn't come. And so he died. Jesus comes along and said, don't worry, he's going to live again. And you have the hope of the resurrection. Where's your mind going to go? Your mind's automatically going to go to that resurrection in the last day. And that's where her mind went. But Jesus had something in store for her. Go ahead, Greg. Yes. 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 Yeah. Read that. Right. Read that passage with that you're referring to. What verse is that? Right. Okay, yeah, I got you. Yes. 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 Now, in that statement, we'll get to it in a couple of minutes, but in that statement, there's no doubt in my mind that that was a lack of faith. I mean, that was a situation where, you know, some people just don't know when there's the right time to do everything. And so here are these Jews. Some of the Jews at that time saw Jesus weep, and their attitude was, look at how much he loved Lazarus. Well, then some other Jews popped up, and these are the ones with the lack of faith, and said, oh, well, if Jesus, you know, if he really, that's a, it's a statement of a lack of faith. They're doubting that he had the ability to do that. And so, I mean, was that the right time to bring that up? It's like making inappropriate statements at a funeral or something. I mean, it's the right time for everything. And these Jews, they would take any opportunity to put Jesus down. Even here, Jesus is weeping. They're crying, and some say, oh, what love he had. Oh, yeah, but if he would have been here. Then isn't that the case? That's more of a, you know, couldn't he have done it? I don't think he could have kind of situation. So, yeah, go ahead, and then I'll get back to you, Greg. Yes. Right. So they would take the position then. There are some who believe, you know, they had, I don't know that we have these kind of people today, but, and I really couldn't verify this in great detail, but I have read where there were some, I think I mentioned last week, there were some professional mourners that would go to different places and mourn, and the mourning wasn't real. It was hypocritical. And so it seems like those comments, they're taking the position that those mourners are like that. It's not real, it's fake. And perhaps that perturbed Jesus. Their phoniness, their hypocrisy in that. I wouldn't spend a lot of time arguing against that. Go ahead, Greg. Yes. Right. Yes. Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yes. And see that, and that's the point, that those Jews, in asking that question, they're leaving it open, but there's no doubt on what they want the people to conclude is no, he could not have. And so it's a state, it without question is what moved him then is their lack of faith in that. I'm not convinced yet. And again, you have to do what, you know, you come to your own conclusion that's what angered, that he was really angry at Martha and Mary over a lack of faith with that situation. All right, anybody else? And we'll move on. Go ahead, Mary. Yeah.
Sometimes when things are sad,
yeah,
I can be okay. But if I see Janice crying and I see Lori crying, I'm going to cry.
Yes.
Or had I not seen them cry, I probably would have
cried. Yes.
So I kind of wondered maybe if that was him.
Yeah, now, well, not to cut you off, but when it, excuse me, when it goes down there, now we've been discussing verse 34, I believe, right? Is it verse 33? Let's see here. Verse 33. And then verse 34, and he said, where have you laid him? And they said unto him, Lord, come and see. And then verse 35, Jesus wept. And I think you're exactly right. What moved Jesus to weep there? Those were tears of sadness, which is interesting by the word, that the word weep there means to shed tears. The weeping, and this might, well, no, it wouldn't. I was going to say this might lead a little credence to what Matt said, but it would, both the crowd and Mary, when it uses the word weep with regard to them, it's a different Greek word, and the Greek word there means to sob and wail. So they were sobbing, they were wailing, they were crying out. Jesus didn't do that. When it says Jesus wept, it just means that he shed tears. And there is another passage where Jesus did do that. That's when he was beholding Jerusalem, and he did, the Greek word there does, but in this case, he just shed tears, and the Jews saw him crying like that. He wasn't making a big scene or anything like that. They just saw him crying, and those tears, I believe, Mary, is what you're talking about, that he saw his friend. I mean, he was a man of compassion. He was a tender-hearted man, and when he sees his good friend, Mary, and no doubt Martha was grieving as well, and he sees that. That would move him to tears. And I think we could all understand that. And now, it still could be that the other Jews with Mary and Martha were hypocritical. I'm not prepared to come to a conclusion about that one way or the other. But it could be that he saw their hypocrisy and was angry with that. All right, anybody else? Yeah. So you guys are pointing at each other. Yes. 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 Yes, and that glory is without question a direct reference to the resurrection of Lazarus, and so they weren't getting that. That she didn't get that until, in fact, I don't know that even there, and what you're talking about, before the tomb, when they finally go to the tomb, They didn't go there. Jesus said, lead me to the tomb. They didn't think, oh, I get it now. He's about to raise our brother. They still didn't get that. And again, all I'm saying to you, don't, I mean, would you have? Like, if he says, let's go to the tomb, you might think, like it says about the Jews, well, we're just switching our location of mourning. We're going to the tomb. When people die, do they ever go to the tomb where their loved one is and mourn there? Yes. And so it didn't dawn on Martha at all. And you're right about that, Barbara. But again, I'm just guarding against saying, well, that was a lack of faith. And I don't know that. And that case, Jesus is overly perturbed at that per se. That, I mean, it's natural. And Jesus hasn't been completely, I mean, he's been straightforward, but his words can be taken a couple of different ways. Why? Because there is the resurrection on the last day that was ingrained in Jewish theology. And so even when he says, I'm the resurrection and I'm the life, he knew what he meant. But they weren't getting that. And I'm simply saying, would you? Would you have automatically, I don't care how much faith you have, would you automatically have concluded that he was about to raise someone from the dead? Probably not. Even when he said that he would raise Lazarus, what was Martha's response? I know you'll do it in the last day. And I, maybe, you know, I can't speak for you all, but I think I probably would have concluded the same thing. As I said earlier, that's our hope, isn't it? We can kind of sympathize with Martha because we're exactly where she is. That's the hope that we truly have, a resurrection in the last day. And since that was ingrained in her mind, I can see her taking the statements of Jesus like that. And so I sort of doubt in my own mind, and again, that that's what really was perturbing Jesus, because it to me, not an overly an outward sign of a lack of faith. As I said last week, I think a lot of what Martha did showed tremendous faith in Jesus. She didn't lose confidence in Jesus, even though her brother had not been raised from the dead. Even though that's exactly what she wanted, she still was able to say, even now, I know you can help. And she wasn't thinking of the resurrection there, because that was the furthest thing from her mind in this text, as we see. So, all right, anything else? We may not even get to the great miracle, will we? But let's, what verse are we on? You don't have any idea, do you? What'd you say? Jesus wept, 35. Okay. And then it's at verse 36. And so the Jews said, see how he loved him. And this is, we've kind of discussed all this ahead of time. But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying? See, I'm not even sure the ones who are saying that are putting total confidence in the fact that he healed the blind, which we know he did, and the evidence is there. But that was a statement, a total lack of faith there, as Greg pointed out, a question mark at the end of that. Could he not have kept this man from dying? And then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb, and it was a cave, and a stone laid against it. And Jesus said, take away the stone, Martha. And the sister of the dead man said to him, Lord, by this time there will be an odor, for he has been dead 4 days. Now, see, now she's already made the good confession, hasn't she? Without question, she believes that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. But she still hasn't pieced it together, what he's about to do. And again, one more time, I'm not going to knock her a whole lot for that. I don't know that I would have at this stage of the game. Yes.
They don't even think of it as a possibility.
Right. Now,
not that he wouldn't do it, but just that, you know, because they're saying if you've been here, they know he could have done something.
Yeah.
They have that faith in him.
Now, the asking to remove the stone would start the mind to thinking there. Because now that's, now, I mean, she realizes, and then she asked the question, I mean, wouldn't there be an older now? But now it's starting to, he's asking for something unusual. All the other statements can really go towards the resurrection of the last day. But why in the world would Jesus want them to remove the stone? See. And so now she questions, and then Jesus, again, and I agree with Barb with this, that in his mind, from the beginning, he knew what he was going to do. He said it way back in verse 4, glorify his Father. This whole thing was for the glorification of his Father. And he has said that to him, just not as directly as maybe we would like or that we would have caught. But he's about to. After the removing of the stone, then he's going to call Lazarus by name. And, of course, the great miracle will have been complete. And we'll talk a little bit about that miracle, not much, but a little bit about it, because it does show great power. And even the way he worded it, he called Lazarus by name, didn't he, to come out of that tomb, which means it's somewhat significant. All right, we'll pick up there with the miracle itself next week.